Hello and welcome to Habemus Papam, episode 38, St. Siricius.
Dear brothers and sisters, annuncio vobis.
Annuncio vobis.
Annuncio vobis gaudium magnum.
Gaudium magnum.
Gaudium magnum.
Habemus Papam.
How's it going, everyone? Today we're talking about St. Siricius, and I've got to make a little disclaimer. I think that's how you pronounce his name. It could be Siricius. I know the C with the I afterwards usually makes a CH sound, so we're going to go with Siricius for now until I find out differently, I guess. St. Siricius was born in Rome around 334 AD. He entered the service of the church while he was still rather young. We learned from his epitaph that he served as a lector, which, as we know from the church today, a lector is a reader of the sacred scriptures, but also at that time was a guardian of the books of scripture. And so he served in that capacity under Pope Liberius, and he was soon ordained a deacon, and then he kept that position under the pontificate of Pope Damasus I. We have to remember that at this time, much of the administrative work of the church was done primarily by the deacons, and so they were often chosen to be pope later on because they already knew the ins and outs of the diocese. He was known to be compassionate and generous, but also he was perhaps a bit proud at times, at least according to St. Jerome, although that might be the pot calling the kettle black, and St. Paulinus of Nola. So St. Siricius was elected pope in December of 384 at the death of St. Damasus, and the first major event of his papacy deals with the promulgation of 15 points of canon law, or what we call decretals. Other popes, it seems, have sent out decretals, but this is the first one we still have today from any pope, and so it's a big event for us. And so what happened was this. A bishop in Spain, his name was Bishop Himerius of Tarragona, Spain, had written to St. Damasus asking a bunch of questions about all sorts of areas of church teaching and discipline. What was the official line? What was the thing they had to hold on to? Damasus had died in the meantime when it took the letter to get to him, and so Siricius responded. Now, though his response is fascinating, I want to pause on just a couple of points since we don't have enough time to talk about them all. And so the first is an affirmation that heretics should not be rebaptized. We've been over this point a bunch when we've been talking about the Novatians or the Donatists, but there's this real insistence that baptism only happens once. It does something to the soul that can't be repeated and can't be removed, which is the foundation of the church's teaching on its sacramental character. And the other point worth noting is what he says about priestly celibacy. You'll have noted, I'm sure, that up to this point we have had priests and bishops and popes who were married or had children, and that was normal. But the practice seems to have been that once you were ordained, you practiced continence, that is, you abstained from sexual intercourse with your wife. And that's why ordained ministers from the earliest time of the church could not remarry after having been ordained. They had to remain continent after ordination. St. Siricius reaffirms this practice in the Decretals, and he wrote, "And therefore he who is the bridegroom of the church wished that its form should be resplendent with chastity, so that in the day of judgment, when he should come again, he might find it without spot or blemish, as he taught his apostle. And by the rule of its ordinances, which may not be gainsaid, we who are priests and Levites are bound from the day of our ordination to keep our bodies in soberness and modesty, so that in those sacrifices which we offer daily to our God, we may please him in all things." So if you've ever heard that celibacy is a very late invention of the church, it's not true. Even at the earliest times, though they were married, they then practiced continence and gave themselves in total devotion to the church. It's a beautiful thing. St. Siricius sent these decretals back to Spain, but he asked that they be shared so that the whole church could follow the same law. Now, the next major event in Siricius' pontificate occurred in 385, and this is when a heretic named Priscillian was executed by a sort of rogue Roman emperor named Magnus Maximus. Priscillian was a Spanish monk and later a bishop who came up with a newish version of the faith that involved kind of strange new practices, very strict penances, and he was starting to get on the local bishops' nerves, including a guy named Ithacius of Osinuba, who accused Priscillian of sorcery and brought him before the local government. Priscillian and some of his followers protested and went to Rome to see if Pope Damasus would help him out, but he was not granted an audience. So when he went back to Spain, he was seized by the secular authorities, with Ithacius accusing him before Magnus Maximus, and he was put to death for sorcery. Now, this prompted a huge backlash, because secular authority putting to death a heretic was not what the Church Fathers had in mind. Siricius, along with two other pretty famous saints, St. Ambrose, about whom we're going to have to talk in a minute, and St. Martin of Tours, they all wrote to the emperor condemning his violence and censoring Ithacius. So this is a first mention of St. Ambrose. And we've got to pause here a little bit and just kind of talk about him, because he's one of the most important figures in the church at this time, and his story and Siricius's are pretty closely connected. And plus, he's my confirmation saint, so I really have to talk about him. I owe it to him. So, St. Ambrose. Aurelius Ambrosius was born in 340 of a noble family in Milan, and he rose up through the ranks of the civil service until he was named the governor of the region surrounding Milan. In 374, there was a huge dispute in the city itself. The Arian bishop of the city died, and there was this incredible tension between the Arian and the Orthodox sides as to who the next bishop would be. There was a deadlock. Most of the people of the city were Orthodox, but the intelligentsia, the upper class, were Arian, and things were starting to get even more than tense. They were starting to get close to violent. So Ambrose steps out to bring order. And he was so well respected by both sides in the debate that the crowd burst into cries of Ambrose for bishop. And the crazy thing was that he wasn't even baptized at the time. In a week, he was baptized and ordained and was the new bishop of Milan. He began studying theology immediately because he figured, well, I gotta catch up now. I just skipped from baptism all the way up to bishop. I gotta learn my theology right away. And he administered the church in Milan, working to remove the Arian heresy that was present there and to persuade the imperial court, who were Arians for the most part, to abandon Arianism as well. He was widely seen as the most influential church figure at the time, especially since the imperial court was based in Milan at this point in history and not in Rome. And so he was more directly influential in the imperial court than the Bishop of Rome was. In 390, Ambrose came in direct conflict with that imperial court. So there was a general uprising that had taken place in Thessalonica over a dispute between the governor and a popular chariot racer. And the populace deposed the governor and killed him along with many of his officials. And this evidently made the emperor Theodosius, who was a baptized and practicing Christian and Orthodox, really, really angry. And in a rage, he sent his troops to Thessalonica and they massacred over 6,000 people there. Now, everyone in the ancient world was stunned by this action, and Ambrose immediately wrote to Theodosius, "This is not how a Christian behaves. You're a Christian. You've got to do better, to say the least." He refused to celebrate Mass for the emperor until he did penance. So one day, Theodosius showed up at the door of Ambrose's church in Milan, and Ambrose still denied him entry. He denied the emperor of the Roman Empire entry to his church. Only after months of penance was Theodosius able to return to the sacraments. This is something unheard of, the Roman emperor bowing in humble submission over his sins. So back to Siricius. In 393, a man named Jovinian appeared in Rome. He was an anti-ascetic. He believed that penance was generally a bad thing, or at least it was a neutral thing, and that celibacy was not that great, and that people who were baptized just couldn't really sin. So needless to say, this teaching caught the eye of the Pope. Earlier in his pontificate, he had to deal with the extreme aesthetics of lots of penance with Priscillian, and now he had to deal with the complete opposite. So Siricius called a council at Rome, while at the same time Ambrose called a council in Milan to deal with these heretics. And we have a copy of their correspondence in which Ambrose says, "Yes, marriage is a beautiful thing, but celibacy and virginity for the sake of the kingdom is something to be praised." Jovinian's teaching was condemned then by both the council in Rome and the council in Milan. Finally, one other big moment in Siricius's pontificate again happened in Milan. At the time, it might have been not have been known to have been a big moment. But in 397, St. Ambrose baptized Aurelius Augustinus, or as we know him today, St. Augustine, one of the greatest theologians of the church. He's going to depart from Milan soon and head to Ostia, right outside of Rome, where his mother, St. Monica, would die. And eventually, he's going to make his way home to Africa, where he'll be made the Bishop of Hippo. And that is certainly not the last we're going to hear about St. Augustine. St. Siricius died shortly after this in 399, and he was buried in the catacombs of St. Priscilla on the Via Salaria outside of Rome. He was succeeded by St. Anastasius I, and we'll hear about him next week. Thanks for listening to Habemus Papam. You can check out the rest of the Catholic Bites podcast at catholicbitespodcast.com or find us on iTunes. Thank you, and God bless.